Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Fighting on Film, the War Movie Podcast. In this new weekly series, we'll be bringing you our review of Masters of the Air as each new episode drops.
Hello, welcome back to our Masters of the Air special. Now, we are on episode 5. We're officially, it's 9 episodes, so I guess we're officially just over halfway into the series. But before we begin, don't forget you can get a huge 10% discount off airfix.com by using the code FOFPODCAST. That's all one word, all caps, FOFPODCAST. Please use it because you can get 10% off some lovely model kits, maybe make your favourite fort from the show. So Matt,
if I had any ounce of artistic skill, I would this week I would be making Royal Flush, which is my fort of the week.
That's my fort of the week too.
In the beginning.
Okay, I like this week. AR Go. That's a good one too.
That is a good one actually.
Like, what the hell does that mean?
we got like 3 or 4 this week, and it's like nice. Yeah, I mean, don't sleep on the FX discount. Get on it.
Please use it because it only lasts until the end of Masters of the Air. So you only have what, 4 more weeks to do it. Yeah.
So this week the episode was directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, who are a directorial team essentially, and they predominantly work on stuff together. Most notably, recently Captain Marvel in 2019. What did you think? Did you see any sort of anything glaring in terms of direction?
No, it flows really, really well. Like it's got down by this point. I think the show's got down its formula. Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about that with Dale in our episode with him a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Of, you know, keeping that continuity in terms of style and direction throughout.
No, it does. I think it keeps its flow very, very well. And the formula of here's your target, here's the raid, here's a little bit what's going on outside of the raid, here's your B plot, C plot type beats. It's got that down, but it deviates from that a little bit from here on in, I think. It does a lot of, I want to say running around. That's not the right way of describing it. From here on in, I think it's more focusing on 3 or 4 people's stories.
Yes, it's
the best way to describe
what we've seen previously is the best non-spoiler way of describing it, isn't it? We get a little bit more with people you wouldn't expect. We get a little bit more in locations you wouldn't expect. Yeah. There's a little bit less of the aviation sort of side of things almost.
Yeah, it's still there, but it's not at the forefront because it's people's situations have changed. And as we'll see in this episode, situations are changing at a rapid pace, shall we say. So the target for today in this episode is the Munster Railway Marshalling Yards close to the city centre. Now, I know, Matt, you've been looking this up because there's a bit of controversy going around about how this episode handles the, shall we say, strategic operational goal of the Munster Raid, shall we say.
Yeah. So I was talking to Francis of Operations Room about this on Twitter.
My boss.
He was saying that he hoped that they would handle it in a way that would be, I guess, true to the reality of the situation, in that they purposely targeted Munster Cathedral at the point when Mass was ending on the Sunday morning and everyone was leaving the cathedral. And of course, around the cathedral is based a lot of the housing of the people that worked on the railways, and I was thinking of next week's episode, and I said I think you'll be interested to see how it's handled, and then on my rewatch for this week's, you know, recording of this review, I realized that it does kind of skirt around it a little bit in terms of it never specifically says we are targeting the actual people
no,
that work on the railway rather than the infrastructure that they work in.
It says there's a character that I think it's the one of the majors' aides. I think he says that that's collateral in a way. Like if you do hit the buildings around that, you'll be hitting the workforce. So they kind of hint on it, and then it's almost implied without being said after when you have the exchange with Egan and Frank. Yeah.
Yeah,
and he says, Jesus Christ, Crank, it's a war. If we bomb people, they're part of it. Now, you know, and Crank replies, well, none of those people that we're going to bomb today shot down Buck, because the main focus of this episode is very much how Buck's disappearance has got Egan. It's really, you can see.
It grows from the end of the previous episode.
I think you told me, or maybe Francis was telling me this week, that the real Egan cheered the fact that they would be doing this raid, and it's not in the show.
I've got the quote, actually.
Great.
Others who had lost friends in the past raids joined in the cheering because here was a chance to kill Germans, the spawners of the race hatred, the minority oppression. It was a dream mission to avenge the death of a buddy.
Wow.
Is the quote around it. I've got a couple of others. A bombardier with a 390th bomb group, John Keemer, said it really didn't sit well with the crews. It was a totally different concept to what we'd always taught. I wondered, what the hell are we doing? That reaction to bombing people, not targets. Whereas, the reality of RAF raids was obviously like, there's going to be collateral damage, there's going to be civilian casualties, etc. In fact, a lead navigator with the 95th bomb group, Ellis Scripture, said, ironically, Scripture was a very deeply religious man, and he said he approached one of his commanding officers and said he was very reluctant to fly the mission, and the and his colonel replied, look, like, this is a war. The Germans have been killing innocents in Europe for years, and we're here to beat them, essentially. And he was threatened with court-martial, and Scripture reluctantly agreed to fly the mission. So it seems there was a range of reactions to the reality of bombing humans.
Yeah, and in Donald Miller's book, it describes how... Weird. Yeah, in Donald Miller's book, Masters of the Air, it does mention how the true intent of the raid was uncovered, I think, in the 90s, late 80s. So that's been known for some time. And I don't think the show sideskirts it fully, but it definitely does try to... I'm trying to get the right word for this. It doesn't present it at the forefront, shall we say. But obviously, if you're watching it as a viewer, it's obvious that those bombs on any raid that the guys have been on so far aren't dropping purely on the target. You know, we're not in the era of smart bombs yet. This is area bombing. It's a product, byproduct of it.
It does say in the episode that you're hitting the men that keep the German railroads running.
So it does say it.
It doesn't mention the cathedral.
No.
Is a key aspect of this. It doesn't mention the fact that it was clearly targeting a civilian target. But again, as you say, area bombing, that is just the mean aiming point for all of these, you know, hundreds of bombs that are going to land in that area around the marshalling yard, around the houses in Munster.
Agreed. So getting back to the episode, the sort of historical controversies are for another podcast to delve into deeper. We just thought we'd pick it out in case listeners weren't aware of that. It doesn't make the show, this episode, any less impactful, I must admit, in its the way it was handled. And that's something maybe we can talk about to John Orloff later on when he comes on the show. So, yeah, hoping for that one. So this is a very short flight. They say, don't worry, you'll be back soon. It's only a short one. Munster's quite close to us. And they can only muster 17 fortresses. And at this point, a lot of the crews are complaining about, why are we going up again? We were just up there. Rosenthal's crew, they're complaining about the amount of missions they've got to fly.
They've done like three in as many days, essentially.
Yeah, you know, they're cooked. You know, they've had enough. So then we get a lovely scene where Croz, he's just been promoted to lead navigator, and he's in more of a clerical office role, preparing the navigational part of the raids. And he has his lunch or his breakfast in the mess hall. He has this really lovely narration about briefing the navigators. And he says, after wheels up, there's nothing I could do. And he gives his friend his back, his lucky snow globe, which is really nice.
Yeah, Bubbles, the snow globe. Yeah. I like that shot during the narration where he's in the mess hall all on his own.
Yeah.
And all the previous times we've seen the mess hall, it's always been packed full of men getting ready for the mission. In that particular shot, it's just him on his own and an orderly clearing away plates.
It's really powerful.
Quite a good shot, I thought.
Yeah, and he's not with them anymore, which is even more, you know, impactful. So this episode, very much like episode 3, is a big raid sequence. It's pretty much from beginning to end again. And once they're in the air, once the fighter escort flies away, just right at the edge of the channel, things start going wrong immediately. So they lose a couple of forts to flak. Then when they're on the way to Munster, they lose another two. So they go down from 17 bombers to 11. And that's even before they've got to the target. And Egan is, you can tell he's feeling something. Everyone's feeling something. You know, they're not as cool, calm as they were a few episodes ago. I think the reality is definitely hitting our cast.
The groups are spaced out as well. So the group behind them is like 5 miles back. The group ahead of them is a couple of miles ahead. Mm. So they're spaced out too much. And they know that they're at risk.
There's a few great scenes in this where a lot of the lads get injured. And it's very visceral, very horrific. You know, there's a sequence where Harry, one of the waste gunners, gets a piece of flak in the head. And it's just, he's just got nothing. There's nothing there. It's just I don't know how to describe it. It's just a horrific head injury.
His face is blown away. By
face
the
is blown away. And
it kind of breaks down the whole crew almost. And there's some quite impactful little sequences where the rockets are coming in and the nose on one of the forts is kind of blown away by a rocket. There's a lot going on in the same sort of way we saw in episode 3, but it kind of just boils down to they're being picked off one by one.
Because there's not enough forts to put that blanket of fire out to keep their Messerschmitts away. You feel how isolated they are. And there's this beautiful shot of I think it's one of the navigator bombers, bomb aimers in the front of the plane. See, I'm still not getting this air lingo down.
We were in one the other day.
We were just in one the other day, I know. In the nose of the bomber, and he looks up and he sees this swarm of Messerschmitts coming at them. And it is a swarm. You know, there's got to be about 100 of them. And it shows you how isolated the bombers are this week. Like they're really on their own. There's as many guns as the forts have got on them, because they've lost so many and they're so spread out. They just can't get the level of fire on these aircraft.
I read, doing a little bit of background on it, there was at least 200 German fighters.
Incredible.
Single and twin engine aircraft attacking them.
Oh, and we say the Luftwaffe was toast after the Battle of Britain.
And the official report says it was the most violent and concentrated attack yet made on this division by enemy aircraft.
Wow. And you see it because they get picked off. Rosie's plane takes so many hits, and you see that when they're back on the ground later on. It's amazing how this thing stays in the air.
Yeah. Funny you should mention that, because you see that big hole in the wing appear from a 20mm cannon round, I think, or some flak. And I did see this week a photograph of the real Royal Flush.
Post that.
And I will do if I can find it again. One of the CGI guys must have seen it, and because they've recreated it really quite well, I think.
No, it looks amazing.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Amazing. It's again, you know, it's the little details in this that we love. And then going back on, it's Rosie realizes they're the only bomber left from the 100th. Mm. Egan's plane is hit. They all bail. A great sequence where they put the bail bell on and everyone's getting out. And there's this great sequence where Egan and his co-pilot are arguing who's going to bail first. And, you know, the fortress is going down. And he's like, it's my crate. You know, it's my bird. I'm not jumping out first. And Egan goes, I'm the senior officer. No, you jump first and I'm jumping. And then they both sort of jump at the same time. And then there's this fantastic. And we were waiting for this, weren't we, when we sort of were doing prepping this series. We saw in the credits that there were skydivers credited.
Yes.
And there's this incredible short sequence where two skydivers who are meant to be Egan and his co-pilot are falling through the air, and you've got what's going on behind them. They get checked by a couple of Messerschmitts. It's just superb TV.
Very effective. Mm. It's also that same sequence where they shoot the bomb site. The bombardier has been wounded, and he says, no, shoot the bomb site. And a guy pulls his 1911 and puts like four rounds into the bomb site to destroy it so the Germans can't capture it.
Heaven forbid they get one of those Norden bomb sites. It's been drilled into us for a few weeks. It's so important.
Yeah.
You know, and they're big.
They are. You know, I've been seeing one in person now. It's
I was amazed how big they are. Because you think at the right angle, the right speed, that might survive the crash. You know, so I can completely get it.
I think a couple of weeks ago they were saying, you can dump it now, we're over water. Because the bombardier was concerned when they were dumping it. I think it was on the flight to Africa, wasn't it?
Yes. Bug says, I don't think they're gonna find it, don't worry. And then after that, Rosie's crew are on their own, and they get attacked by a couple of Messerschmitts. And then there's this sequence. This is much like episode 3, where it's just things keep happening. Mm. And it's edgy, you see, it really is. Rosie does some amazing flying to angle the bomber so his gunners can get the best aim on the incoming Messerschmitts. And he flies it almost like it's a fighter. Like, it's amazing sequence. You see the guys holding onto the side as the bomber's like banking, and it's just some great flying, and also some great insight into Rosenthal himself, because he is this legendary figure within the 100th. It's an incredible sequence. I just, again, like, this is episode 3 levels of brilliance.
Yeah, and if you watch that, you will be tempted to say, okay, that's television. That seems
you would
like
be thinking that
it's exaggerated for that, but it isn't. He did literally dogfight with a B-17 because they're the only four left out of the bomb group. They are being beset by about half a dozen Luftwaffe fighters. He's throwing it around, pitching and urine, just trying to like throw them off, throw their aim off, because they're not expecting a bomber to maneuver like that, because the strain level is the aim of the game for bombers.
Exactly.
But you know, they're not in a formation anymore. So he's got to do something. And he's throwing the ship around like it's nothing. And that's no mean feat, because the controls are wired directly to the aerolons and the flaps. So they're literally, they are pulling directly. It's not hydraulics. It's not all this. Like, they're literally pulling. So the two of them are having to work on the controls to maneuver the aircraft. And I, doing a bit of research, I found an extract from Sergeant de Blasio, who was the tail gunner on Royal Flush. And he wrote a letter to Rosie in 2001, and he explained the situation. And the two waist gunners, as you said, couldn't really hold on. They're like clinging on for dear life because they're being thrown around. They're not strapped in.
No.
The very nature of that gun position is you can't be strapped in. You're like moving around.
In front of a huge window. You're not expecting the B-17 to just suddenly bank 90 degrees. You're held on for dear life.
And the show captures it pretty well because it shows them being thrown around, like grabbing onto the side and hanging on for dear life.
The empty shell cases go flying. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's good. And de Blasio said he was the rear gunner. So he's the most isolated man on the crew. He's all the way back at the tail of the aircraft. And he says, I lined up on the number two from my left and fired three short bursts. His left wing flew over his plane and crashed into the plane on the outside. Both went down on fire. I then switched to their inside plane on the right and fired at him. Smoke started coming from the plane and the canopy came off. The plane rolled and the pilot ejected. I couldn't follow his plight as I had one more plane to deal with. Just as I brought my sights on him, he peeled away. And by de Blasio's account, he shot down six fighters.
Wow.
Which makes him an ace, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
If I'm not incorrect, that kind of makes him an ace. But he, obviously, with the rest of the wing gone, there's no one there to actually verify, seeing these fighters get shot down. And also, with the rest of the wing gone, he wasn't really at the time thinking about, oh, well, I'll claim those six aircraft I've shot down. He was kind of, going through some things at the time, so it wasn't a high priority. So it was never really officially recognized or verified because it wasn't witnessed.
Yeah.
But the account that he wrote in 2001 is really interesting.
That's amazing. And that sequence is just something else.
Just illustrates the difficulty.
Yeah,
because what happened was, because of all the rolling and the pitching that Rosie was doing at the controls, trying keep out of this little line of fire of the fighters coming in left and right, the Luftwaffe eventually they realized that the easiest way to do this would be to line up on his tail and just follow his tail. So that basically gave de Blasio the perfect shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing stuff.
And made it count. And they once they knocked out those half a dozen aircraft, they kind of peeled off due to needing to refuel. And at that point, the rest of the Luftwaffe squadrons that kind of scrambled to get them on the way back, they were dealing with the bomber group that was ahead of them. So Royal Flush managed to get through without any more real hassle. But obviously, they were on two engines. So as we said, they're dumping all of the equipment that they can, shooting the bomb site, throwing out casings and guns and equipment.
Massively. No, it's a very bombastic raid scene this week. Really is one that you'll want to watch if you haven't yet. So Rosie gets back on the ground with his crew. There's a very somber scene right at the end of the episode with the in the interrogation hut, and it's literally the crew's just saying a bomb will be read out, no record. It's very, very heart-wrenching. It's very bleak.
Powerful.
Powerful and bleak. And one of the guys says, really bad up there, sir. We didn't have no time to take records. And then he talks about Bubbles Fort. And Crosby's in
the room, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the waist gunners, or one of the maybe the top turret gunner of one of Rosie's fort, says, they blew up, sir. No, sir, no shoots. He's getting very annoyed. And then the episode ends with Croz reading a letter that Bubbles wrote about his death that didn't happen. And that is very strong. And then while all that's going on, Egan's on the ground in Westphalia in Germany. And it sets up the next episode as what's going to happen to Egan. Yeah. Now Egan's had the same fate as Bucky, being shot down.
Yeah, on the run. I also like the reactions of the ground crew as well. I thought those little scenes were really well played out. The impact of just one plane returning.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insane. Again, just mad levels of losses for one raid, one sort of very controversial target is sort of quite the irony of them going to do that and then the irony of one bomber coming back is quite big for me this week. So I think maybe we can have a quick alley tally because we haven't had one properly. And there's a lot in this episode that I picked out.
Oh, go ahead. You make a start.
Just a quick one. So this week is the first and probably only Bedford report of Masters of the Air. At the very, very start of the episode, we see a Bedford OY that drops off Rosie's crew because they'd accidentally landed on an RAF base. So they were transported back in the Bedford OY in RAF colours, which is lovely. Really love to see that. And then there's a really nice spit because it's something me and Matt were wondering about for weeks. How do you do your business in a B-17?
And we you know, next week, well, Wednesday, when you're listening to this, we'll have an episode out with Hattie Hearn of the American Air Museum at Duxford. And of course we asked her and she very kindly explained the nuances of how they went to the toilet in a B-17 during the war.
Yes.
And she explains it far more eloquently than we did. But there is that brief sequence where someone has a wee.
Someone has a whiz in a condom and throws it out the bomber waste gunner's window. And the woman goes, geez, how much coffee did you have? And you know, this the darkest whiz you've ever seen in your life. Like, bro, must have been cane in the coffee. it's just really nice. And I like the sequence, the little section of Egan swapping his jacket out because Buck always hated the jacket. And I was like, it's kind of showing that he wants to imitate his friend because he misses him. I really like that. Really nice little sequence there. A bit more characterization through clothing there, Matt. I know you're loving me doing that lately. Anything for your rally tally this week, very quickly?
No, nothing really, other than I liked the fact that they shot the bomb site.
That was
a good inclusion, you know.
Lovely that bit.
But again, a strong episode. Contentious in terms of its handling of signposting the actual intent of the raid. But in terms of visuals and performances, very strong.
No, incredibly, incredibly strong this week. I've got in my notes here, episode five is probably just as good as episode three in terms of scale and the aerial sequences. And it's yet again another episode that does set up more to come. And this is, I was talking to a few people this week about episode five, and some people are like, oh, well, you know, what happens next? Is this going to, you know, what happens now? Are we going to see this, that, and the other? And I'm like, sometimes with this series, I wish that people could just quickly jump to next week. But then in a way, I'm glad that they can't. So I'm in a weird limbo at the moment where I'm like, oh, I wish people could just see this as one lump. Because it really does. The more I watch it, the more I realize that it does flow very, very well, actually. So I just wish people are going to stick with it for next week. And I said that again there, that, you know, the controversies about the Munster raid and how it's presented, they don't detract from the episode, but I think I see it as he's trying to present it in the way the guys would have seen it at the time. So we're just seeing one crew member talk to Egan. We're not necessarily seeing or hearing all of that room and how they're feeling about it. So I'd like to think that there's a crew over in the corner that are saying, oh gosh, this is this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But we're just seeing it.
Someone mimicking, echoing scriptures.
Yeah,
comments
perhaps.
About, disagreeing with it and that kind of thing. Interesting.
And it doesn't hit you over the head with the modern reflections and the modern revisionism and knowledge. Because I think the way that Orloff's tackled this is it's trying to be of its day, of its era. So not necessarily with what we know now. So I'd like to talk to him about that going forward.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see whether he's writing it in the moment rather than with hindsight sprinkled in. But yeah, interesting thought.
Yeah, no, but again, a very strong episode of Masters of the Air yet again. We hope you're all enjoying it and we hope you're enjoying these mini reviews that we're doing. Stick with Fighting on Film for another Masters of the Air review and stick with us for more War Movie reviews, and we'll catch you again next time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.